Whether you drive a car,
need a car,
or just occasionally bum a ride with friends,
you've come to the right place.
Join Jill and Tom as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, this is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, and I am Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Hey, thanks for joining us today. When you get a chance, check us out at consumerguide.com. While you're there, check out our 2023 Best Buy Picks. This list is an excellent starting place if you are looking for a new vehicle. And this is important, you can listen to back episodes of the podcast right there on our homepage. All right, Jill is out. She is shopping for a new hot tub. She didn't say what happened to her old hot tub. Sitting in is Brendan Appel. Brendan, 2 weeks in a row.
This is great.
Thanks for helping out. Good to have you here.
My pleasure.
I made a mistake last week.
Uh-oh.
It doesn't affect anything, but I said Jay's potato chips.
Yes.
I meant Lay's potato chips.
Well, isn't there also a Jay's?
Yes.
Okay.
Chicago brand.
Yeah, Jay's the Chicago brand.
Yeah.
I know. That's why I didn't correct you, because I thought that was correct.
A fun Jay's story.
Okay.
Is that Jay's potato chips are actually called Japs, J-A-P-P-S. And around World War II, they're like, this is a bad name.
Yeah. Yeah.
That story. I think it's true.
Yeah, that sounds about right. If you know Chicago, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't think they sell Jay's potato chips in Japan, but they do sell Frito-Lay.
Lay's.
So there you go. My bad. I'm sorry about that. I have a better quiz for you this week.
I hope so, because I did totally bomb that last
one. I'm gonna tell you what the topic is. Are you ready?
Okay.
The topic is 1980.
Oh, okay, good.
The 1980 model year.
I like this already.
Yeah.
I am a child of the 80s, although I was only five in 1980, so you're going to just give me some grace there.
I was a lot older.
I'll leave it at that.
I was 15. So I was already paying attention to cars then. Our guest today is Monica Gorgas of Lincoln. We'll be talking about the new Lincoln Nautilus, which is being redesigned for the new model year, being moved up market. There's a lot of story there. And then we're going to talk a little bit about Black Label and what that means. Now, you know what that means.
I do know what that means.
I don't know if a lot of people know this, but Black Label is not only a trim level, it's like an experience level.
Yes.
It's like
the VIP treatment.
Yeah. You get stuff with your car, like free loaners. I don't know if you get better service, nicer service.
Yeah. It's like
free coffee.
It's almost like valet all the time. I can't wait to ask her what's included. We very nearly bought an old Lincoln Nautilus, which at the time was called the MKX. And it would have, the one we were thinking about getting would have been a replacement for our original one. The new one would have been a Black Label, which was at a lot of nicer interior finishes too.
Black Label 2 comes standard with Revel audio.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with Revel audio?
I played with it in that car.
Holy cow.
It's good.
Right now, like the whole auto industry seems to be just dripping with really good audio systems.
Yeah.
But there's a Cadillac AKG system, which is very good. There's the Jeep Stellantis Macintosh system,
mm-hmm.
which is crazy good. And there's this Lincoln Revel system.
And I'll add one more into that list.
Oh.
My favorite is the Lexus, Mark Levinson.
Mark Levinson. And Mark Levinson's available across the line.
It's
not just
so
top-endy. It's very good.
So good.
It's very, you know what? It's exactly what you would expect from a Japanese car maker. It's very clean.
It's super clean.
Yeah. Fussy clean.
It's so good.
Do you listen to a lot of music in the car?
I do. But I also listen to a lot of podcasts. So the funny thing is they can put these great sound systems in them, and then you're listening to podcasts. So
yeah, I don't know if you need like really good audio for the Car Stuff podcast.
Probably not. The bumper music, though, comes.
That's quality.
Yes, total quality.
Yeah, but after that, it's just our voices.
Yes.
Which are good. They're fine.
Add the bass in. Play with the EQ.
So before we went on air, we were talking about a topic near and dear to your heart.
Yes.
And you've written about this.
I have been writing about this since the first article I wrote about this was in 2018. So we're talking 5 years ago, and it's just been a constant on my mind, and that is the manual transmission, which I like to refer to as the Lord's transmission, because I find it to be a godly way of shifting gears. We were talking about this because the rumors of the death of the manual transmission have been long and persistent.
Yep.
And yet there are sort of like death throes of new cars coming out with manual, sometimes manual only, such as in the Type R. Or the GR Corolla that we just wrote about
and
we talked about last week. But there are still debates today. I'm in one right now on the C8, Z06, and E-Ray group on Facebook that is literally these flare up like sunspots every few months, and people are just still talking about whether, you know, the manual transmission. So I wrote this article. It's called The Great Transmission Debate, and it basically talks about why people love manuals, kind of what's going on with them. Are they going away? And if so, this is my favorite part of the topic, why are they dying? Whose fault is it? Who's holding the smoking gun?
Well, I'm with you on this, but I'm also a little cynical. I think we're on the exact same page. I've owned nothing but manual transmission cars for like the last five vehicles I own. But on the other hand, I can smell death and I know they're dying. And part of the reason is, and we could talk about in a moment why manufacturers are in a hurry to get rid of the manual, because that seems to be the case.
It does.
But manuals are totally incompatible with things like adaptive cruise control and a lot of ADAS, advanced driver assistance systems.
Yes, they are.
And they have no purpose in an electric vehicle.
Right.
And they're confusing mechanically in a hybrid. There have been hybrid manuals, but they're weird.
They are. So it's right now you're seeing a very strong move toward performance vehicles being the home for manual transmissions, which is not something that manual transmission lovers will be opposed to, because that's where they're the most fun. And that's the first thing on my list in this article is why is a manual better than an automatic? Well, A, it's just more fun. Back when I was a kid, you'd walk up to a really cool car, you'd look in the window, and you'd look for two things. You'd look, how high does the speedometer go? Because, of course, that told you what the top speed of the car was, right? They never lied. And then the second was it a manual? And if it was a manual, you just sat back and sort of awe, like, oh, this is – the person who drives this car must be so good at driving, because it's an art form. And conversely, if it was an automatic, you're just like, what a waste. Nobody wanted to see that the automatic 928, and there's a lot of those out there. But it's such a nostalgic thing. But like payphones in public, they just started disappearing. And one of the things that just really kind of brought this to my mind is back in the 90s, when a lot of my car thoughts were materializing and solidifying, the one that strikes me the most, and it's repeated by lots of manufacturers, so I'm not picking on Dodge, but they brought out the Stratus, and they brought out two engines, a four-cylinder and a six-cylinder. Nice-looking car. And, you know, something that you're like, well, you know, if you need a sedan, and it was front-wheel drive, but maybe you'd opt for that stick shift. Well, you could only get it on the four-cylinder. More and more, you saw that manufacturers were sticking the stick shifts on the smallest engines with the lowest trim. Same thing kind of happened with the Jetta that I bought my daughter. I got her the SE trim, which was the highest level you could get with still a manual transmission before the GLI. And so there was this whole list of like creature comforts you couldn't get if you wanted the stick shift, because you had to give up the stick or you had to give up the creature comfort.
Yeah.
So a lot of places do this, and I think when they complain about that nobody wants a manual, you have to ask these manufacturers, well, what did you do to either enhance the manual transmission's success or to kill it? Did you put the manual with only the worst engines and the worst options and the lowest trims? Or did you put it on the halo cars that everybody knew this was something special, and to drive this car, you needed to learn how to drive stick? That's why I love like the Ford Focus RS back in 2016 came out to the States finally. Manual transmission only. The Type R, manual transmission only. That Corolla GR, manual transmission only. Because it went back to the days of the Ferraris and the Lamborghinis in the 80s, which were just the pinnacle of automotive performance. And you had to learn how to drive stick and drive it well, or you were going to break the car or not be able to move the car.
And the horrible irony is Ferrari is all automatic now.
I know.
Lamborghini is all automatic now.
So what happened
was, Aston Martin's been all automatic for decades.
Although they went back a little bit and now you can get a Vantage V8 with a stick.
So, I didn't know that.
And that's consumer demand. Porsche did the same thing with the 911 GT3. They got rid of it, and then 16, 17, around there, there's so much demand for a manual, they brought it back, and it sells great.
See, when they launched this generation of 911, they actually launched it without a manual.
Yeah.
Like, it went a model year without a manual. Like, what's going – that?
And people revolted.
I thought that was the death of stick. Like, when Porsche – you can't get one in a 911, that's the end.
And let me tell you some good news, because I will complain all day long if you let me about this. But there is some good news out there. The models that you can get in stick have actually sort of grown, and maybe not in full number, but at least better cars are coming out with manual transmissions. So you've got, you know, the Black Wings from Cadillac, all the CT,
which is crazy,
CT4 and 5V.
Like, what your average Cadillac buyer is, what, 81?
Yeah.
No, I know the Blackwing buyers are younger, but I'm impressed.
Yes.
First of all, those are good cars. The CT4 and CT5 are good cars anyway.
Exactly.
I've never driven the Blackwings, but it's cool as heck you can get stick in those.
It is so cool. And, you know, look aftermarket for the ones. If you found yourself with a mid-2010s Cadillac CTV manual wagon, you have a unicorn among unicorns, and that car will always be worth money. And it's the same thing with the current
I drove
crop.
One, by the way.
Oh,
yeah, we had one at Consumer Guide. It was a test car, and it was crazy. But yeah, manual transmission, high-performance wagon.
Yeah.
Cool as heck.
And that's another thing, you know, besides it being an anti-theft device, because nobody who steals cars can drive stick, apparently.
Also, apparently no one can park your car if you valet.
No, which you get to then valet your own car. That's the great thing. So not only that, but they're also better investments. So look at all the Ferrari prices for the last 430s and all of the last manual Ferraris, double the price of an automatic.
Seriously?
On the aftermarket.
I didn't know that.
Because people just want that. They, you know, cars will always get faster. This is what the engineers don't understand, because they're like, no manual. It's faster with an automatic. Okay, that's great.
Well,
but the next
faster on a track,
right? And but is it more fun? They never asked that question. Although Toyota did with the GR, they were like, this is the fun car. It's a manual only. But okay, let's say you're an engineer and you're going, I want the fastest car. Well, the next model year is going to be even faster than this one. So what does this older car have to offer? It's not the fastest anymore. Is it fun to drive? Well, not as much as if it would have had a manual. And ergo, a Ferrari and a stick shift is worth double the Ferrari and the automatic, because it's more fun to drive. And at that time, in a few years, the raw speed isn't going to matter as much as the fun, the coolness factor, all of those kind of things.
Now, I do have to make one little pitch for the automatics. The automatic transmission in the Porsche 911 and in the Golf and Golf R, or the Golf GTI and Golf R, is really, really good.
It's so good. The PDK is so good. And you know what? If you're living your life by the tenth of a second, if you're in the Fast and Furious, or you are a race car driver, and that literally dictates your paycheck at the end of the day, go for that. But if you want to have fun in a car, you can have a car that doesn't have a lot of power, but is getting the job done in the fun factor department. And it's, we've always said this, it's more fun to drive a slow car fast than a fast car slow. And so having that stick shift ups the fun factor, which is why the Miata's always had one and always been so much fun. And the take rate on a Miata is really, really high. The Subaru BRZ, you've got all of these great cars. The Elantra N I love in a stick shift. But then you've got like the Bronco and the Jeep are still available. But now I will fault Jeep for this. You can only get the stick shift on a Jeep in the 3.6 liter. Why not the 392? Like the best engine and in stuffing that big Hemi V8 in there, and I can't roll my own gears.
I'm guessing in that case, here's the thing about the 392 Jeep, and this is just a huge V8, and it's available in the Wrangler, and only in the four-door, I believe. The thing about the 392 is I think they wanted to limit that as much as possible and just make as much possible money as possible, because they have a 5.7 liter V8 Hemi,
yes,
which they could have made available in all the Wranglers, but they didn't. Instead, they went with this really high performance and expensive version.
The 6.2.
And I think it's just a profit thing versus a corporate fuel economy thing.
Well, we should talk about what one of the drawbacks is, and that is that manufacturers have to crash test every engine and transmission option. And so that's what stopped a lot of cars, I think, from being developed, is just the development cost of having to do two transmissions. Now, there are some out there, like I said, not all bad news. You've got a Porsche, after being spanked on the 911 because they're faithful and true fans, demanded it. So the only Porsche you can't get a stick in is the 911 Turbo. All the other 911s, pretty much you can get a stick shift in. The 718 Boxster and Cayman, you can get it in. Obviously, you used to be able to get, this was the best thing, if you could find one, go out there and look for a Cayenne with a manual. The first two generations had them. They're super rare and valuable.
I drove a GTS stick.
Yes.
And it was weird for a number of reasons. First of all, it was awesome. It was awesome, but the stick was located high on the console. So
yeah,
it was
a little bit
weird
Romeo
to drive. Yeah, it was a strange thing to drive because your arm was up on the armrest.
Yeah.
It was cool. It was very short throw. So you could rest your arm on the armrest and just kind of use your wrist.
Yep.
But it was the weirdest experience. But yes, I remember that car, and I think it was just the GTS.
Yes. Well, no, actually the base one too.
Oh, okay.
So I might have been through all the whole line, but it was only the first two generations. So you got to find one. And the ones you see now have so many miles on them because people love driving that car. But they are out there. They were great cars. And the other one, so again, the Tacoma, Toyota's doing a great job, by the way. I want to
shout out to Tacoma. The new Tacoma is going to have stick.
And the new 4Runner. So God bless Toyota.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think they are putting a manual in the 4Runner. It's basically going to be the same drivetrain, I think, on the Tacoma. But so Toyota's doing a great job. Porsche's doing a great job. BMW's got the M2, M3, M4. Got a couple Cadillacs. Hyundai is sticking with it in the Elantra. So there are ways to get your fun on and roll your own gears. Now, why is this bother me so much? Because there's so many cars that I would have purchased had they come in stick shift. So listen up, manufacturers. You missed out on sales if you made the Dodge Charger in 2006 and later. I thought that would have been a perfect M5 competition if it had a stick shift. The Nissan GTR, I would have bought one in stick. If I was looking for a car at the time, I ended up buying the S4.
And as I've noted, and I haven't driven a GTR in a long time, but this is Nissan's ultra high performance.
Yes, all-wheel drive, perfect winter car for Chicago with sports
super capability. Unpleasant to drive in traffic.
That
automatic blows.
Yeah. So there you go. Should have been a stick.
Yeah.
The Challenger Hellcat Red Eye never came in a stick. The one that really got me, I was ready to buy this car, like putting money down. Alfa Romeo's Giulia Quadrifoglio was supposed to come with a stick. It had a stick in Europe, and it didn't come over with one.
I didn't realize that. I thought it was available with stick.
Yeah, just in Europe, though.
So we're running out of time here, but what is the end game here? Obviously, stick is going to go away at some point.
You know, electric cars are going to kill the stick shift, I think. But that depends on if electric cars can replace every vehicle. And I don't think they eventually will. I think we'll end up with a hybrid version, and synthetic fuels might play a role in here. And that's a discussion for a different day.
Yeah.
So if they just end up landing on really cool SUVs like the Wrangler and the Bronco and really awesome sports cars, we'll be fine. It'll be like an equestrian center for automotive purists who want to just drive their stick shift cars. And as long as someone is willing to still make a gasoline car and still put a manual transmission in it, and Miata or Mazda has said this about the Miata, that it will always be gas and stick, at least as an option, then I think we'll be fine. I just weep for cars like the Corvette C8, which I probably would have owned two by now had they come in stick and they had a drive-by-wire patent that would have allowed them mechanically to do it, and they just didn't. And I thought that was just a lost opportunity. They could have, I mean, can you imagine a mid-engine Corvette with a manual? How, like, people would have paid any amount of money to get that car.
They would have. Here's my fear, and why I'm a little cynical about this entire conversation, is simply that as the take rate on manual transmissions declines, suppliers of the equipment to build manual transmissions are going to stop building them. They're going to get out of the business.
This is where the business,
like BorgWarner and companies like that, are going to decide, well, there's no money here anymore. And as the volume drops, manufacturers are going to see less and less incentive to do this.
It is. It's kind of like circling a black hole.
It is.
It kind of self-fulfilling prophecy that it's going to go away because of that, the business aspect.
I mean, I love stick. And every car I owned for a long time was stick. And like I had just a particular car, a 1999 Nissan Maxima.
Great car in a stick.
And that 3-liter V6 used to spin like crazy.
Fast.
And a nice five-speed,
great
clutch.
Great car.
That was an excellent example of a Japanese manual transmission and clutch.
Oh, they were so good
back in the
day.
So much fun. That car was funny too. Cloth interior, no ABS, but sunroof.
Yeah.
I don't know. I bought it used. I don't know who the previous owner was, but he was crazy.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
So that's the story there. I feel like I want to eulogize the manual transmission, but we want to see it live a few more years.
Yeah, it's on. It's in ICU right now, but the future's looking bright for the short term, not so bright for the long term.
We should mention though, and this is super interesting, that the Toyota Supra, available for 2023 with a manual transmission for the first time. And this is interesting too, because it's built alongside the BMW Z4, mostly with BMW parts, but Toyota put the money into this. That manual is only available in the Supra, not the Z4.
This is one of the reasons I love to sing Toyota's praises, is because they did something like that. Now, I will kind of ding Toyota a little bit, unless it just took them that long. But I think that the fact that the Nissan Z came out with a manual transmission sort of kicked Toyota in the tail to get them going on that. But I'm glad that they did. And you're right. They had to design their own transmission for an engine that wasn't theirs just to bring the manual
for
to market.
For a very low volume car.
Yes. And so God bless you, Toyota, and all of the the five vehicles that you have in stick shift, including the GR86, which is one of the best manual transmissions.
Have you driven the Supra with stick yet?
I have at Road America.
Oh, you did?
It was fantastic.
Oh, I have not driven it. It is fantastic.
Yeah.
I expected it would be.
Yeah, it was just as well as I expected as well.
And, oh, that's very cool.
Yeah. So,
and that's priced like on par, right? It's a no-cost option?
I believe it is a no-cost option.
All right. All right, we've wasted a lot of time here, and we didn't waste any of it. We didn't waste any of it. We spent a lot of time.
You let me exercise my demons of complaining about some things.
But we will. I don't know if people know this. I write a summary of every podcast posted on Facebook, and I will link to both your articles.
Yes, so there's two articles out there you should read that are very informative, including why Chevy was lying about the reasons why they didn't put a manual in.
Oh, and people should know this. Brendan is a great writer. Just throwing that out there.
Thank you very much, Sean.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we talk to Monica Gorgas of Lincoln about the all-new Nautilus. Stick around.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, and I am Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. I am here with Brendan Appel of the Sons of Speed. Anything new going on at the Sons of Speed?
You know, we had a lot of great feedback on that GR Corolla article that we put up last week, and we are going to be putting some more stuff up this week. The Lexus... you drove it to that electric. I can't remember the name of that.
The RZ450E.
Yeah, a lot of letters and numbers.
They have nothing to do with anything.
Nothing.
Yeah.
So that was a very nice vehicle. We'll be putting an article up on that shortly as well. Just check it out. We've got our series of the lap is going to start up soon, and that's where we take cars out on the racetrack from our MAMA event.
Uh-huh.
And we spend a lap with them, and we talk about the cars in real time, just as our first impressions go around. So we're going to be launching that shortly. We'll let you know when that's going up.
Cool.
You can find us at sonsofspeed.com.
Sonsofspeed.com. And of course, we are motor driven.
And that too.
All
They're
right.
The same place.
This is the part of the show where I typically promote myself. You want to follow me on Twitter? I am Car Guy Tom.
Car Guy Tom on Twitter.
Yeah. And use the Car Spotter hashtag when I spot something fun or cool. What did I find recently? I found something that very much entertained people. I can't remember.
I can't either, but you do find really entertaining stuff that I do enjoy viewing. The nice pictures you put up there of those.
Yep. All right. Our guest today is the brand manager for the all-new Lincoln Nautilus. That is Lincoln's midsize crossover, their two-row crossover. It is all due for 2024. A lot going on there. Welcome to the podcast, Monica Gorgas. Monica, how are you?
I am doing well this afternoon.
Well, congratulations on the new car. Tell us what a brand manager does and what your task is here with the Nautilus.
Yeah, absolutely. So what a brand manager does, especially with an all-new vehicle, is really try to package and put together the best possible product for the brand, pulling in key elements of design and technology to attract new clients and ultimately grow the brand and grow sales and share. So that we can, you know, continue to have a great future.
Cool. Now, you've got an all-new product. Now, one of the things you're calling this product is global, as opposed to sort of North American or U.S. Tell us what that means.
The fact that this product is global, we are leveraging our resources globally with our teams in order to produce this product and bring it to the U.S., not only from an engineering standpoint, we're utilizing resources, but then here in North America, utilizing, again, like all of our design resources, technology when it comes to software, everything, per se, behind the scenes to create this awesome, new, exciting, cutting-edge, technologically advanced vehicle.
Now, tell us a little bit about what the Lincoln lineup is now and where the Nautilus fits in that.
Today, currently, we have four SUVs in the lineup, so we have the Corsair, which is our small premium utility vehicle. Then we have the current Nautilus, which, like I said, is an all-new coming in 2024, which is our medium premium utility vehicle. Then we have the Lincoln Aviator, is our large crossover premium utility vehicle. So that's where you pick up the third row. And then we have the Lincoln Navigator, which is really the flagship for the brand, that is in that large traditional premium utility segment.
Does anyone ever thank you on behalf of the general public for using real model names and not alphanumerics?
I know that it's definitely an interesting time in the car business because there are a ton of alphanumerics and sometimes it's hard to keep track of all of them.
Those are good names, though. I like Corsair. I like Aviator. Those are good names. Navigator. Those are good names.
Excellent names. And as an MKX owner, I'm so glad that you changed the name because I could never remember if I was calling it the MDX or the MKX. It was just like too many M's and X's. Yeah. All I was reading Roman numerals.
Yeah, it's crazy. I like model names. So, Monica, what are the big differences between the 2023 and 2024?
Well, the big difference is really, I would say, all about the tech. So when you step into the all-new 24 model year Nautilus, we want you to feel calm, cool, and connected. So the new technology brings awesome levels of personalization. So I heard you when you introduced it. The new 48-inch display that stretches from pillar to pillar gives customers a new sense of customization that they can utilize different apps and widgets to put meaningful driver information up at the eye level while not being distracting, but also making it intuitive and easy for our clients to utilize. On top of bringing in like new multi-sensory cabin experiences like Lincoln Rejuvenate and Digital Sense.
Talk a little bit about Lincoln Rejuvenate, and I have a surprise for you that you can't fully experience, but my notes smell like Mystic Forest. I'm giving this to...
I chose the same scent. Yeah, you were giving out samples of this, and I chose that same scent. It's so good.
Tell us about Mystic Forest and what that means to the buyer. I think I just confused a lot of people. I need you to straighten this out.
Yeah. So Mystic Forest is one of our three digital scent cartridges that we will have available at launch. So 24 model year Nautilus introduces integrated digital scenting, which allows clients to select a scent in their center stack touchscreen and have it diffused through the cabin of the vehicle, freshening up the cabin, letting them relax, recharge, however they might want to use a diffuser in their vehicle.
I have to tell you that integrated digital scenting is perhaps the finest acronym of 2023.
Yes,
I agree. 2024. That is so cool. And now to talk about how that works, what is it you're trying to accomplish with that? And did you test this on an audience? Do people find that they're actually calmer or happier or more relaxed when they get out of a scented vehicle?
So what we did when we crafted the experience was we went through a lot of scent testing, and we're very excited to get it in front of consumers out in the public. And we have received a lot of great media feedback thus far on digital scenting. And, I mean, who doesn't love to smell a bunch of new scents? I mean, I know I personally do. But ultimately, it really feeds into, I would say, our brand strategy from like a relaxation and wellness standpoint, where at Lincoln, when we talk about Rejuvenate as well, we're trying to create this multi-sensory experience for you inside the cabin. So digital scent integrates into the full Rejuvenate experience where we combine the best of everything we have to offer from massaging seats, choreographed visuals dancing across the 48-inch display, the Rebel audio system, digital scenting, all to create this immersive relaxation experience.
You know, people might wonder when they're ever going to use this, and you guys had a very good explanation for that. And that is, picture you getting home from a long day at work and you have four screaming kids inside your house and you just need a minute after the traffic to reset. So you can turn this on, you can get yourself centered, you can experience the sense, which the cartridges for are cleverly hidden under the center armrest, and then you can go and face the rest of your day. I appreciate that. It actually is very, very cool. I don't want to sell the outside of this vehicle short, though, because as beautiful as the interior is, and it is beautiful, you should check pictures out if you have not seen the inside of the new Nautilus. But the outside is very much reminding me of the upsized Aviator, which is a beautiful vehicle.
Aviator is a great looking vehicle.
It's so good. And I have friends that have both the Aviator and the Navigator in their lineup, and their daughter's about to start driving. I wouldn't surprise me if they added this in there because they all look so beautiful. So you did a great job on the outside of the vehicle. Oh, can you tell us what you changed from 23 to 24 outside? They're just refreshing the look, which is great. But anything else?
Yeah. As far as the outside of the vehicle goes, our design team did an excellent job. And the Nautilus features dynamic new exterior LED headlamps and LED tail lamps with animation. So it really takes our Lincoln Embrace feature for lighting into the future as we like reinforce the lit Lincoln star with the signature front light bar. You'll also notice as you look along the side of the vehicle, really the athletic and agile stance with the new elongated fender ornament, as well as how the soft touch door handles are now beautifully integrated into the belt line. That does not disrupt the overall design of the side face of the vehicle. And I would say lastly, for the exterior, the really exciting thing is we are happy to introduce the Jet Appearance Package. So this gives our clients a totally new way to personalize their vehicle with that sleek and monochromatic look that we know that they love, with some of those blackout package elements that really do appeal to a younger audience.
Monica, can you walk us through the trim levels? I want to talk a little bit about the top trim level when we get to it.
Yeah, we have on 24 model year Nautilus Premier, Reserve, which brings in a few more of those creature comforts, and then Black Label, which is our ultimate expression of the Lincoln brand from both a design and experience standpoint.
Now, Black Label is interesting because, as you noted, it's an experience, right? It's a trim level, but it comes with services and features that are not just limited to the vehicle itself. And this is interesting, I think I just learned this today, Black Label not available at all dealerships, right? It's kind of a special thing?
Correct. That is true.
Yeah, so tell us about that Black Label experience. Why would people want to? It's a fairly big dollar commitment to move up from the Reserve to the Black Label. Why would someone do that?
Absolutely, because it's really about the lifestyle experience. So Black Label is the best that we have to offer, like I said, from an interior standpoint, giving you, again, these bespoke, curated interiors that perfectly come together to create a specific mood. But from an experience standpoint, you're also given 70,000 Lincoln Access rewards that you can use for benefits like annual detailing or a culinary collection meal, as well as a premium maintenance plan comes with your Black Label vehicle purchase, as well as a pursue your passions experience opportunities, which is really about giving our clients thoughtful and dedicated experiences to things that they want to further explore when it comes to wellness, travel, and different cultural experiences in their city. And then last but not least, of course, your upgraded travel partnership with Avis for the Avis President Club.
Interesting. So does the Black Label series of benefits, do those extend to second owners of the vehicle?
They are just with our first owners of the vehicle.
Okay, so limited to buying it new and nothing then. After that, it becomes a used car, basically. A good used car.
An excellent new vehicle.
Now, what I'm picturing in my mind when you read that off was, you know how Jeep has the Jeep Jamborees and they organize all the owners and they go off-road and they have fun together? I'm picturing everyone pulling up in their Lincolns to like the Met to in their black ties for
yes,
a special
absolutely.
Event. Yes.
Same kind of thing, different shoes.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I'm picturing in my mind. That would be great. We have a couple of powertrain choices in here, and of course, being a part of the Sons of Speed, I do like speed, and you have something that gets us up over 300 horsepower. So can you give us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So new for 24 model year Nautilus, we are introducing a 2-liter hybrid engine. So super excited to bring that alternative powertrain to the lineup. And overall, this capable and efficient electrified option is one of the most powerful offerings in comparison to our key competitors in the segment, with a targeted total system horsepower of 310.
Nice.
So I can definitely say that our clients should be super pleased with that performance.
Yeah, and as a former owner, like I said, of the MKX, I think we had It was under 300 horsepower, then around 250. I did not have the twin turbo, and it was pretty peppy even for that. It didn't have any trouble getting up to speed. So over 300, you're going to be doing just fine.
So the base car is 250 horsepower, I believe.
Yes.
Hybrid's 310, and all of them come with all-wheel drive, correct?
Yes, correct.
So tell us just a little bit. We're coming close on time, but tell us a little bit about who the shoppers are, who the buyers are for the Nautilus.
Our target buyer is someone who's a little bit on the younger side, looking for something that's tech-forward and meaningful to fit into their daily lives. As far as not being overly filled with technology where you see, again, all of these connected, you know, and gimmicky features, for instance, coming to life, but actually giving them an experience inside their vehicle that helps them get from point A to point B effortlessly and seek knowledge along the way. So really giving them that self-improvement opportunity also through their vehicle to not only get better over time, but help take them to new places so that they can experience things along their journey as well.
Excellent. Monica, we've run out of time, but tell us when the Nautilus goes on sale here in the U.S.
So the 2024 Nautilus will be going on sale here in early 2024, and you can find out more information on it at Lincoln.com.
Awesome. Monica, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you. That's Monica Gorgas with Lincoln. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, it's 1980 quiz time. Woo-hoo. Stick around.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, and I am Tom Appel, and with me, Brendan Appel of the Sons of Speed. We're not related.
Just no.
No.
Unfortunately, you'd be a great brother.
Yeah, yeah, that would be cool, but no. I want in on your inheritance, but no. We are not related, and in fact, we're probably pretty far related.
Yeah.
As your family's been in the U.S. for a long time.
Yes, yes. So. Since at least the 1800s. Mid-1800s.
Something like that. I mentioned to you when we had lunch today that my daughter forbids me to get like a 23andMe DNA test.
Yes, and as your lawyer, I concur wholeheartedly with. So when she's listening, you did a good choice.
She said, I preserve the right to do crime.
Yes. And that's why I second that.
All right. It's quiz time. But before that, just remind us how we can keep track of you and your good friends at the Sons of Speed.
We are motordriven.com or sonsofspeed.com. We'll get you to our website. And then we're on Facebook. We are on Twitter as Real Sons of Speed. We are on Instagram and TikTok. Pretty much everywhere, and YouTube, of course. I almost forgot the big one. And there we are Motor Driven at the YouTube channel. And then I think we have to do a little bit of a mea culpa because we got instantly fact checked.
Oh yeah, that's right. Partner. Thank you for reminding me.
Yeah. So Paul texted in to tell us that actually the stick shift in the Supra is a BMW product, but Toyota just tweaked it to feel better. But we should still give kudos to Toyota because BMW didn't put it in the Z4.
So. No. Yeah. Very interesting decision that BMW is giving its transmission to someone else to use as competition for its own vehicle.
Nothing like an instant feedback and fact-checked from...
Our very good friend Sam Fiorani does that.
Yes.
Yeah, I get fact-checked a lot by Sam. It's good stuff.
Yes.
Sam is awesome.
Yeah, and when you're wrong, you're wrong.
You
it takes a big man to admit when he's wrong, and I am not a big man.
We do need to be correct. Consumer Guide used to do a lot of hardcover books. People might remember them. But one of the things the publisher at the time used to say about our writing was, as long as it's right.
Yes. Accuracy.
He wasn't much for style.
Better to be right than first. So
all right.
There you go.
It's quiz time.
Yes.
And I'm going to make up for last week's quiz.
I appreciate
which was kind of complicated.
It was a little more on the difficult side.
Yeah, wasn't fun. So today's topic is 1980.
I love the 1980s.
1980, Ronald Reagan was elected president. Dallas was the most popular TV show. And you know what the most popular album was?
1980, was it something by the Bee Gees or Fleetwood Mac?
No, it was Pink Floyd's The Wall.
Was that 1980?
Yeah.
Wow. That was crazy. Yeah, great album.
I knew a lot of people who said that if you ever get stoned, you want to watch The Wall. That's what people told me in high school.
Aren't you supposed to listen to it with one of the cartoons like Alice in Wonderland or something?
Oh, Wait, we're confusing something here. Is it the wall?
Is it Dark Side of the Moon?
There was something.
Oh, no, that was Dark Side of the Moon. That's what I was
thinking. Dark Side of the Moon.
The wall, though, is a great, yes.
Yeah, that's it.
Welcome to Music Talk.
Yes, all right.
The Appels.
1980, are you ready, sir?
I am, yes.
All right. Brendan, the 1980 model year, was the Chevy Citation available?
Yes.
The General Motors legendary X car, legendary, unfortunately.
Well, it was definitely available in 81. I'm going to say yes, though.
Yes.
Yes.
Actually, 80 was the first model year.
I thought there was.
It was available really early in 79.
Oh,
so it had one of those huge model years, like the first Mustang. So it racked up a lot of sales.
What a horrible car.
See, it was a disaster, but it was actually kind of a good car. Like it was space efficient. It rode and handled well. The design was interesting. Everything about it was conceived well and executed so badly.
Really?
So many recalls.
Why did every one of them seem to be beige?
At least I don't
the
know.
Ones around
here. I don't know. The ones that survived are beige.
Yeah, they're all beige.
Yeah. So that was General Motors. Was that their first excursion in the front-wheel drive? I think it was.
It might have been.
Yeah, it should have been good, and it wasn't. What a disaster. All right, you're on the board.
Yay!
You have 1 point. The Ford Fairmont. Could you buy a Ford Fairmont in the 1980 model year?
That would have been the tail end, I think, of the Fairmont.
The Fairmont was literally a caricature of a car.
It was. I'm going to say no. I'm going to say 79.
It was.
It was in 80.
Yeah.
Was that the last year?
78 through 83.
It went through 83?
Yeah, it had a good run.
Wow. Okay.
All right. You're one for one.
I am.
One for two. I'm sorry.
Yes.
The Chrysler Imperial. Was there a Chrysler Imperial available in 1980?
I should know this. I think my father-in-law had a New Yorker, but well before I knew him, but that was like their favorite car. The Imperial, if I remember, was that the... Did Ricardo Montalban have anything to do with that, or was it the other Chrysler products?
Oh, it was Frank Sinatra.
Ooh.
For the Imperial.
Well, you had to upscale it for the Imperial.
Yeah,
that was the most exquisite one, right? The Imperial.
Yep.
1980 Imperial, Chrysler Imperial. Oof. All right, I'm gonna go with no again.
Correct.
Okay, good.
No, 1981 through 1983.
I was thinking 81.
It was based on the Cordoba of that era, and you could get a Frank Sinatra 8-track set with your Imperial.
Oh, no. See, now that's good cross-marketing right there.
Yeah.
By the way, Cordoba, surprisingly nice car. Our friend Chris Balmas had a 76 Cordoba in green.
Uh-huh.
And it's emerald green with the Corinthian leather. And it was very, very nice. It actually drove really well. It had a 400 in it. It was very nice.
What had the 400?
With the two barrel.
Yeah, most of them were 360s. And you could get a 318 if you were lame.
Yeah.
They were all kind of lame. But, I mean, there was no power there.
No, that was the two barrel.
It was the mid-70s.
It was so choked.
There is, maybe we should add that the original commercial for the Cordoba with Ricardo Montalban is so good.
It's so good. I love that guy.
It's just him in like a suit and like this cool Cordoba keychain, and then him driving on mountain roads.
He could sell dryer lint with his voice.
I would buy it.
Yeah.
I would buy it. Anything that Khan was selling, I would buy it.
Oh, yeah.
All right. You are 2 for 3. You're doing good. The rule is that you need 3 for a win. That includes the bonus question. Was there a Volkswagen Dasher available for the 1980 model year?
Wow. Should I admit I have no idea what a Volkswagen Dasher is?
I don't know that anyone does. I can tell you that globally, the Dasher was called the Passat.
Ah, okay. Did they follow it up with the Prancer? That's what I want to know.
Not in the U.S. That feels like an Argentinian model.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
The Dasher, they did sell it in the U.S.
They're absolutely sold a Dasher in the U.S.
Okay, all right.
Nice car, actually.
It's a total wild guess. I will say yes.
Yes.
Oh, right.
It was called the Passat B1. It was the first generation of that. It became the Quantum for 1982.
You might remember that Quantum name,
which was based on the Audi 4000.
Yes.
Really messy history here.
That is definitely a tortured past.
It is. You already got 3, so you've won.
I love it.
You can rest easy. You can relax.
I'll be the relaxium.
You can phone the rest of this in.
Yes.
Brendan, the Cadillac Cimarron, could you buy one in 1980?
No, 82, I think, was the first.
Very good. It's 82 through 88.
See, I do know something about the 80s.
There you go.
Horrible car. Another one.
Why did they think that they could call that a Cadillac?
It's somebody in my school had one in 89, and they had an older, like, used Cimarron, and that thing was rusting all the way through at it, 5 years after it was built. It was awful.
At some point, they stuffed a 2.8 liter V6 under the hood, which made it interesting.
Yeah.
And I knew a guy that had one, and he just beat the tar out of it all the time.
Everybody did.
I'm like, this is kind of quick, I guess, but it's still stupid.
It's so dumb. It was a Cavalier with Cadillac badging on it.
It was a terrible Cadillac.
Yes.
It was a mistake. So many mistakes.
So many mistakes in the 80s and the late 70s.
All right. You have already won.
Yes.
You won 4 for 5. Congratulations. Mm-hmm. Here's the bonus question, which always has something to do with the topic at hand.
Yes.
Today's topic is, which of the following movies has the lowest IMDb popular rating?
Oh, I love this. This is great.
Yeah, I haven't done this in a while. Are you ready?
Yes, I am.
I've got 4 movies for you. You need to tell me which one has the worst popular rating.
Popular rating, not critic rating.
Correct.
Okay.
Ready. Spanglish, the 2004 Adam Sandler movie. Star Trek, the motion picture, 1979.
Okay.
Starring DeForest Kelly.
I've seen that recently. I went back and watched it. Why do people not like this movie? Oh, that's why.
Yeah. The funniest thing about that movie, I was years ago, I was at Best Buy or something, and they had a special release of that movie with 20 minutes of additional footage.
That it did not need.
Yeah, shoot me now. I don't need to see that 20 minutes. Because there's like an hour of the original movie that doesn't need to be there.
Oh, my God.
What a terrible movie. The Sting 2, starring Jackie Gleason and Mac Davis. Or Caddyshack 2.
Wow. Okay. That is a collection of movies you'd never want to see.
I should have made these all sequels. I've got The Sting 2 and Caddyshack 2. I should have made them all sequels.
Yeah, well, the problem is that any Star Trek sequel is way better than the first, so you probably...
Oh, yeah.
That would have eliminated it right away. Based on the fact that Star Trek fans will probably still not rate that movie poorly just because they like Star Trek, I'm going to eliminate that one.
They're like Tesla owners.
Yes, exactly. So they will put up with a lot of bad. I don't like Star Wars fans, you know. We kind of, you know, do that too. I'm a Star Wars fan myself. But Spanglish was horrible. Caddyshack 2 could have been a little funny. And Jackie Gleason's always a good actor. I'm going to say Spanglish.
Spanglish is the worst?
I'm hoping it is.
It is not.
Oh, my gosh.
Spanglish, which I didn't realize was directed by James L. Brooks.
Wow.
This has to be his worst work.
Yeah. They had to do that on a better, lost a better.
James L. Brooks, not only responsible in part for The Simpsons, also produced The Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Yeah, really,
which is
good TV.
Brilliant.
So maybe he just should stick to TV.
Yeah, he should. Yeah. So that 6.4 rating.
Okay.
Star Trek, 6.4 rating. You're right.
Yeah.
That's just some strange loyalty.
Yes.
The Sting 2, 4.9.
Yeah.
Mac Davis. First of all, you have Mac Davis filling in for Robert Redford. What the hell?
Not going to work.
Yeah. Caddyshack 2, 3.8.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah. Jackie Mason, Robert Stack. I've seen that movie.
I have too.
It's very bad.
It is. But when you're a young kid, when you see that movie, nothing ever seems as bad as it really is when you're a kid. I remember thinking Dragon Slayer was a great movie when I was 8.
I'm troubled by how incredibly bad Dan Aykroyd is in Caddyshack 2. This is Dan Aykroyd.
I know.
He's a funny guy.
It's funny. I just watched Summer Rental from John Candy. I'm a big John Candy fan, and I hadn't seen the movie before, but I bought the DVD for $5. I figured it's low investment, right?
Yeah.
Not a great movie. My wife did not like it. I kind of just tolerated it.
I, too, love John Candy, and I'm always glad that before he died, he got to do Uncle Buck.
Oh.
What a great movie to feature John Candy.
I have an Uncle Buck story.
Oh.
That very good friend of mine, we were talking about at lunch, whose parents worked on the Navy base in Glenview. His brother is the kid in the waiting room in the school when he goes to talk to the principal.
Oh, that sits next to Candy?
Yep.
And doesn't Candy like pat him on the knee and then take his place in line?
Right. He's like, let me take care of this. And they had lines for him. And Candy looks at him and says, what are you in for? He goes, betting on Duck, Duck, Goose. But they cut the line.
Oh, that's a shame.
It is a shame.
That's a good movie. You know what that car is?
What is that thing? It's an Oldsmobile or a Buick?
Mercury.
Oh, Mercury.
Yeah. It's like a 77 Grand Marquis something.
Oh, such a fantastic movie with a fan. That car was so awesome. And he just knew exactly when it was going to backfire.
There's also, that movie's great because there's a lot of Chicago things in it. On the dashboard of his car is a Superdog box. which isn't very sanitary, but there it is. It's on there. And then I don't know if you remember Lonnie Brooks, a Chicago blues musician, but in his house, when he gets the call to go out and babysit.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a poster for Lonnie Brooks in the background.
Yeah, and he's living across the street from Wrigley Field.
Yes.
Just a fantastic movie, a great Chicago movie. Any John Hughes movie is pretty much going to feature some part of Chicago. And if you just kind of want to get a good sense of like 80s John Hughes, you can't go wrong with Uncle Buck, you know, Ferris Bueller, obviously, and The Breakfast Club and a bunch of others.
And then doesn't everyone live in Winnetka?
Everybody lives in Winnetka. And it's so funny.
Everyone in Chicago is rich.
I know. Exactly. If you don't know Winnetka, it's one of the ritziest parts of town and very expensive homes. And it's funny because everybody's like, in Home Alone, the Home Alone house is also in Winnetka.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's the meme that says, I want to know what Mr. McAllister does that he can fly his entire family to France first class and they live in that house like that. Like,
yeah, that's some money.
That is money.
That's some money. Real quick before we go, we're almost out of time here. I just wanted to talk about a car I drove last week, the Nissan Ariya.
Yeah, I saw it in the lot. It was beautiful.
Dang, what a nice car.
Yeah.
It's nice because we were just talking about the Lexus RZ 450E, if I've got
and
that name.
And thank you for
right.
remembering the name.
Which is a fantastic car, I think, but the range is ridiculous. It needs range.
And it drops 60 miles when you turn the air conditioning on.
Never turn on the air.
No.
Which defeats the purpose of owning a luxury vehicle.
Right.
The Ariya has almost 300 miles of range.
Wow, that's impressive.
And it feels a lot like the Lexus. The interior is not as nice.
No.
But it's quick. It's fun.
But there's nothing wrong with the interior, by the way.
No.
It's very nice.
No. Now, it does get pricey. I drove the top trim level with all-wheel drive, $62,000. But you can do one for as little as $45,000.
EV prices are going to drop. I think that we're seeing the tip of the spear with, mainstream EVs that aren't Teslas. I think you could count on those prices coming down. And one thing people don't realize is that the federal and state subsidies to these things actually help keep the prices up because the manufacturers know that
it's
free money for
them. It's literally $7,500 that they can charge more for the car.
And Ford proved that when they started raising the price of their F-150.
Sure. And what happened made perfect sense, right? Manufacturers, except for Tesla, aren't making money on EVs yet.
Right.
So they're going to charge as much as they possibly can to offset that loss. And they're going to be reluctant to lower prices to make this work, because they're going to have to amortize these costs over time.
Right.
But in the meantime, they're going to charge as much as they possibly can. And if buyers are rejecting those prices,
They'll bring it down. I had a $7,000 plasma TV when they first came out. I am embarrassed to say you could buy the same TV now and LCD and a much more beautiful LCD for like $250. So there you go. For price of early adoption.
Yeah. Well, we bought an Apple IIe.
Those are pricey.
Yeah. In 1984. Yeah, we paid big money. My dad paid big money for me to have a computer because I should have a computer.
Yeah.
It was part of my education.
You know what? And after you saw the Ferris Bueller's Day Off, you should have figured out how to change your grades with it.
Yeah. It looked easy in the movie.
Exactly.
All right. Guess what we did?
We ran out of time because we had a great time.
We did. Yeah. I had an awesome time. Thank you for helping out today.
My pleasure.
Thanks to Monica Gorgas of Lincoln. Thanks to producer Randy and the good folks here at Talk Zone. Thanks to Brandon. I just did that. And the Sons of Speed. I hope they can join us again soon. Next week, Jill says she's back. We'll see.
We'll see.
All right. That's the stuff. We'll talk more about cars again.
Next week.
Remember to check us out at consumerguide.com.
The Car Stuff Podcast is produced by J-Turn Media.
To advertise on the show, please drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.